Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. Before March of this year, about 25% of the workforce sometimes worked from home. Now, according to at least one study, nearly half of us do, all the time. And that's if you're lucky enough to have a job or a company that says it's okay to stay home until you feel safe to come back to the office. And suffice it to say, there's been a bit of a learning curve for both employers and employees. As one woman tweeted, it's official, it's no longer work from home, it's just do home things at work. But whether you love it, hate it, or just feel kind of meh about it, working from home will probably be a part of our lives for a while to come. In our series called The Future of Work, we explored what work will look like in the months ahead and how it will change and how it will stay the same. We kicked off our series with Callie Williams-Yost, who has been writing about how to get the most out of flexible work for years. She's the founder and CEO of the Flex Strategy Group, which helps organizations reimagine how, when, and where work is done. Her most recent book is called Tweak It, Make What Matters to You Happen Every Day. Callie uses the term flexible work, so I asked her how that's different from working from home or remote work.
Well, flexible work encompasses both all the options, where, when, and how work is done, because ultimately not every job can be done remotely. And when we're past the pandemic, even people who work remotely now might also want to be going into the office over a period of time. So you really want to look at flexible and remote work, or how, when, and where are you able to do your job and manage your life.
What does a flexible work day look like?
Well, we always have to break it up right into pre-COVID, COVID, and post-COVID. Pre-COVID, as you said in your introduction, there weren't as many people working flexibly as there are now. And now in COVID, we do have, as you said, over 50% of U.S. workers are currently working remotely, full-time remotely from home. 25% of those, it's for the first time. But we also have a sizable percentage of people who are working flexibly in terms of being part of flexible teams, are being part of redesign workspaces so that there can be a social distancing. And that is flexibility, too. So we're seeing a lot of flexibility now. Now, in terms of where we're going with all of this, once we're past the crisis part of the pandemic, I do think we're ultimately going to evolve into a dynamic, flexible, hybrid, remote, on-site work reality. And that's something that is going to come.
You wrote an op-ed that appeared in USA Today back in April, and you wrote, historically, flexible work has been misunderstood and undervalued. How have companies approached flexible work in the past? What do they not understand and what do they undervalue?
Well, it's really were two tracks. First was flexibility is not new. It's not like we haven't heard of it before, but it was often very organic and kind of random. There wasn't a coordination to it. Either that or it was very siloed, rigid. It was a policy and it wasn't broadly distributed throughout the organization. So again, it was misunderstood in that it wasn't seen as a strategic imperative. It wasn't seen as a way of operating the business, which was not true. It's actually a very powerful way of running your business on many different fronts, from talent to productivity to resource, leveraging your resources well. But what we found with the pandemic is that leaders saw this is a powerful way to continue to operate. It's an operational resilience strategy. And I think what we saw was leaders saying, okay, this is being flexible in how, when, and where we do our work is actually a way I can run the company, run my organization. And so I think that's going to continue going forward. It has now become part of the way we're operating and is going to be so going forward.
The topic this half hour is the future of work. Let's go to line two. And we're going to talk to Diane, who says she's working some strange hours. Hi, Diane. Thanks for calling All of It.
Thank you. This is the first time I've worked at home for such a long period of time, like since my company's office shut down in March. And it's good because I'm saving money, I've noticed, but I do definitely work more. You know, like I was telling your screener that, like, if I suddenly remember something at 8 o'clock at night, I turn on the computer and start working again, and I'll keep going till like 10 o'clock. Whereas if I remembered something at home, I certainly wouldn't run back into the city to the office to do it. You know, I would just make a note to myself and take care of it the next day. I feel like because I'm home, like I'm supposed to just do things as they come up. You know, like I don't keep set hours, you know.
Mm-hmm. Diane, you're so not alone. You're not alone on this. Amy on Twitter says, I feel more pressure in my job and will be remote for the rest of 2020, or at least separation of work and life is really hard. I stop early, I stop later, and I'm one of three people in an apartment working from home. So, Callie, my question to you is, there is, we can talk about productivity, but there's also the possibility for burnout in terms of working at home.
Yes.
How can we make it more sustainable? That's what I'm getting from our caller, Diane, mm-hmm. and Amy on Twitter.
So it's important to remember that many, if not most, of the leaders, managers, teams, and individuals were thrown into the remote and flexible work deep end with COVID without any preparation or timing. And that's what we're seeing here. Successful flexible work actually does require a set of planning, coordination, and execution tools that, again, most people did not have. So that's why they're struggling. We're not being great about prioritizing, and we're not being clear about measuring what the outcomes are. We're still sort of looking at time in terms of how we're determining if the work is getting done. We aren't good about establishing clear protocols regarding communication, what channels of communication we're using, when we're using them, how we're using them best, and with whom, and those boundaries between work and life. We are watching the real-time destruction of the boundary that we thought was there between work and life. I'm going to say it probably really wasn't, but we thought it was there. And that is especially difficult to know when to shut down and when to start up again. And it's really tough and challenging for parents with young kids, school-age kids, and those with mm-hmm. caregiving responsibilities. And so, again, I think as and all of this, again, is happening against the backdrop of economic uncertainty, which makes it really hard for people to speak up. So I think the first step we need to take is employers need to bring an extra degree of trust and empathy to the table and really encourage those problem-solving, improvement conversations around prioritization, around setting clear protocols around communication, and also trying to set those boundaries more effectively. It really is going to be important if we're going to make it the long haul with this.
My guest is Callie Williams-Yost, founder and CEO of Flex Strategy Group. This is part of our series, The Future of Work. Callie's been a big proponent of flexible work for many years. Listeners, we want to know, how is working from home going for you? Have you felt like it's been truly flexible in terms of remote work over these last few months? Are you feeling more pressure? Maybe you feel more productive. Let's get in on this conversation. Give us a call, 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. If it's easier for you to tweet to us, do that. If it's easier for you to send us an Instagram message, you can do that too. Same handle, at all of it, WNYC. Let's go to Yarrow on line one, because you brought up families with children and remote learning, and this is something Yarrow wants to talk about. Yarrow, thanks for calling all of it.
Hi, thank you so much. Yes, I am able to work from home. My employer is very flexible. Actually, one of the things that we do is we actually advocate for working parents so they get it. But I have two kids under five that are here with me as I'm doing some work from home on some days. And when school starts back up, my five-year-old is going into pre-K, but we only have remote learning options for 3 days of the week. So that really is like a lot of people's situation where they're going to have to watch their kids. And so I just wanted to say how hard it is and how important it is to have that employer be flexible and understand. Otherwise, we're going to have this huge issue of discrimination happening for working parents to juggle it all, right? And also, I just wanted to mention and talk about the Families First Coronavirus Response Act and how it does allow for workers who are covered to take leave, not only from their jobs if they have to report, but if they can't work remotely because their care for their kids is just too much and they're not able to even get work done remotely. And that actually covers people when the schools, the kids' schools are closed or working remotely. That is part of the coverage, even though that law expires at the end of the year. It's something that the employer has to then, if they're covered, pay the employee to take that leave. And I just wanted to make sure people knew about that.
Yarrow, thank you so much for calling in and making that contribution. Let's go to line three and Anita. Anita, thanks for calling All of It. How are you feeling about working from home?
Well, I feel like it's good in a lot of ways. I cut out the commute and I can be with my kids, but it's also tough in others. Like, I have to set the boundary. So I appreciate what you were talking about earlier and what your guest was saying, because it is really hard to, like, have that work day fit between 9 and 5 and not wind up going later. Even though I feel like my employer also has been really good about, first of all, making it possible to work from home on different platforms and then even improving the types of systems that we're using, but also sending out information on, like, wellness and stuff like that to give us different supports that we can access. Mm-hmm. But I'm just kind of overwhelmed, I guess. And so I fall back on my previous decision to try to do it all by myself. So,
okay. It sounds like you need to join us at 1 o'clock every day for our minute meditation, Anita. Just start with 1 minute and then take some more time for yourself. Seriously, though, do take care of yourself. Thank you for calling. Jack on Twitter says, I like working from home. I'm a computer programmer and can work anywhere. So that's the good. The bad, question mark? While I have flexible time, there's not much to do because of COVID-19 shutdowns and restrictions. And I'm wondering, Callie, if that is part of the overworking, is that normally you'd say, like, hey, I'm wrapping this up and I'm going to go meet my friend at a bar. But, you know, the options are limited outside of work in some ways.
You know, I have heard that from people. It's kind of like, well, what else am I going to do? I can't really go anywhere. I'm sort of stuck in the house. And I think that's where, again, it's that intentionality to say, mm-hmm. okay, what else could you be doing? Even if it's a matter of just reading a book or going for a walk or spending time with your children or your partner or a friend that is you know, social distancing so you feel safe, really putting that on your calendar and making sure that you are trying to shut down and shut off. Because, again, this is a marathon and not a sprint, and we are going to have to be able to bring our best selves to the table. And you want to just make sure that you are taking care of yourself as well as doing your job. And if you love your job, that's great. But you still do need to make sure you have other parts of your life in there.
It's interesting you said marathon, not a sprint, because initially I think a lot of people thought, I can do this for 6 weeks, I can do this for 8 weeks, and now we're at 5 months and it could go to be a year. What do you see that's changed about working from home since March, and what hasn't that probably needs to?
Well, I think it was survival in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I think we just had to dive in and make it happen. And rapidly, if you really think about it, how rapidly such a huge percentage of our economy switched over to a radically new way of working. It's really, truly remarkable. And people did the best they could. I think where we have to go now is we're moving from survival into really stabilization. We're sort of settling in. And it really does require having those improvement conversations. Again, how can we prioritize better? What matters? How are we measuring what we're doing? How are we communicating with each other effectively? What are those boundaries? I think those are really the next stage conversations that we need to be having. And the good news there is all of those conversations are going to lead us to what is going to come next. We are going to be able to leverage that learning and then begin to build and rebuild to something I think it's even going to be better. So,
you know, some companies have flirted with remote work before. Some decided that it wasn't working. They say, you know, that productivity fell. I think Yahoo was one of the companies that early on had people work remote and then called them all back. This is years ago, not in the COVID time. So what have we found about the relationship between employer-employee when it comes to remote work? What does each party need to keep in mind so that it can be successful?
What happened in those previous circumstances is that was a policy. Mm. And flexible work is not a policy or a program. Flexible work is a culture and operational shift in the way we work. So there has to be the underlying cultural change that happens in order to implement flexibility and how, when, and where work is done. And what that means is you need to train people. You need to train managers to manage, but it's not just managers. This is a model of shared leadership that's required. So managers need to set clear objectives, give feedback, provide resources, but individuals need to partner with that manager, and they need to work together to determine what do we need to get done and how, when, and where do we do it best. So that, again, the business is getting done, but people are also able to do their jobs and manage their lives. It's really got to be that win-win in the middle. And I'm going to guarantee you those organizations did not do the hard culture shift work that had to take place in order to align that new way of working with the way the organization was operating. And that's where we have to go next. So again, I think our minds are being open, and a lot of the reason that did not happen and that we didn't understand that. And so now with COVID, we now see, okay, wait, this is a radically new way of operating. What does that mean for us? How do we have to what are the skills we all need at every different level? And then how do we have to align our organizations around this new way of operating? That's when it's going to work. And it's not necessarily going to be all remote. I think this is what we have to hold on to. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a dynamic hybrid on-site, remote, shifts in time where you may be on-site sometime and you may be remote other times. I don't think you're going to have the majority of people working remotely in most organizations once we're on the other side of COVID. I do think it's going to be a truly high-performance, flexible work culture.
Let's go to Vishal, who is online too. Vishal, thanks for calling All of It. Are you there? Vishal, go for it. You're on the air. I can't tell if he's shy or not listening. So I'm going to follow up with you, Callie, before we go to the break. What is some language people can use when they, you know, people may be listening to this and thinking, I don't even know how to even bring this up with my employer. I'm not really sure how to ask for more flexibility. I'm not really sure how to ask for more time, you know, definitive times. What's some good language?
Well, you always want to come to the table with a plan. This is what I tell everybody. Sit down, look at your job, and think about how, when, and where you can do it. And not only how you're going to do it, but how you're going to coordinate with everybody else. When you come to your manager with a plan, they are much more likely to sit down and talk to you about it and come to a mutually beneficial outcome. Just keep it about your job and think about, okay, how am I going to do it? When am I going to do it? And where am I going to do it? What technology am I going to use? What space am I going to be working in? Now, right now, it could be remote. But ultimately, when we're post-COVID, there could be other options with that. So again, just make it about your job, come up with a plan, and engage in that conversation with your manager. And now, especially post-COVID, I think you're going to see an openness to having that discussion.
My guest is Callie Williams-Yost, founder and CEO of Flex Strategy Group. We're talking about how workplaces will continue to adapt as part of our series this week, The Future of Work. So when you think about, since you've been studying this for a long time, what has changed significantly about remote working, and what have been some of the lessons learned?
So what has changed about remote working, and what are some of the lessons learned? So what has changed about remote working is that it's not something that sits off to the side. It's like you are not a remote worker. It's just now how you're working, right? So It's sometimes you're working in the office, and sometimes, this is again post-COVID, sometimes you're working in the office and sometimes you are going to be working remotely, depending upon what it is you're trying to get done. I think that's the biggest change. It's not really a policy. You don't want to put something like boxes around it. It really has become integrated into the way the organization operates. And that was happening actually before COVID. Our research found, national research of U.S. workers found that a third said they did most of their work from a remote location. So again, we did go into this not from square one. What we've now found, though, is that more people can do it. It can be just an integral way of the way we're operating, and it actually can ultimately help us work even better and smarter, manage our lives, but also get our jobs done. So again, I think you're going to see it even go to the next level once we're done on the other side of the pandemic.
We have some interesting on Instagram. I was looking at this one and I can't find it. Someone on Instagram is saying that they feel a lot of pressure to meet people's kids on Zoom, to talk about their pets on Zoom, that there's this idea that people have now come into your home and into your personal life. You know, is it something that companies need to make policies about, or is this just maybe common sense or a conversation you need to have with your coworkers directly, like, my life is my life, even though I'm on Zoom?
You know, that's a really good question, Allison. I think what we're finding now is we're making our way, right? I think there was a feeling when we first got into all of this that how do we stay connected to each other? How do we still know each other about each other personally? And so there was this movement to say, hey, let's share something personal about ourselves so that we know a little bit more about each other. And I think what we're finding is, for some people, that works great. They are very comfortable with that. That's fine. But I do think this is one of this next stage areas of focus is to say maybe that's not going to be okay for everybody. And we have to make sure that's okay as well. I think with the kid thing, and maybe even barking dogs, it's a little tougher because right now we're dealing with an unusual, I always want to try to avoid that word unprecedented because we're using it so much, but it really is an unprecedented situation where, you know, we do have our kids are there and our dogs are potentially going to bark and we have our roommate working next door. And so you almost can't help it on some level. So we do still have to be forgiving about that and patient. But if there really is something where there's sort of an activity where we're going to all share something personal and you don't really want to, I think you need to be comfortable to say to your manager or to your team to say, you know, I'm just going to sit and listen. I'm happy to listen to, you know, what all you are doing and, you know, but don't feel like you yourself have to do that. So again, it's really figuring out where those boundaries are again, and we're still working on that.
What is the biggest don't in all of this for the employer and the employee when you're thinking about flexible work? The biggest don't for the employer and a big don't for employee.
Okay, the biggest don't when it comes to flexible work for the employer and for the employee, I would say for the employer, try to put a bunch of rules around it because this is not a rule. This is a process. So you want to put in place a process where people are partnering together to figure out what they need to do and then how, when, and where they're going to get all that done the best and allow for there to be differences across groups, across jobs, but keep that process the same. It's consistent that everybody's following. The outcomes are different. I think employers sort of want to put rules around all of this, and you just really can't do that. In terms of an individual, what the biggest mistake is with flexible work is I think we think it's all or nothing, right? It's either I have to be remote work all the time, or I have to be in the office, or I have to shift my schedule or all the time, or I have to stay with the same schedule. And actually, believe it or not, small shifts make a big, big difference. So you may find when you are the other side of COVID, and in fact, we find when we go into organizations and we do implement strategic work flexibility, and people do have the freedom to determine how, when, and where they work best. On average, it's between about 2 days remote. So again, it's not an all or a nothing. It's a combination of all the time, the place, the space, the use of technology that you pull together in order to get your job done and manage your life.
My guest has been Callie Williams-Yost, founder and CEO of Flex Strategy Group. Callie, thank you so much for being part of our Future of Work series.
Oh, Allison, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.